Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Hope everyone had a lovely Independence Day weekend. And let's, get to the happy stuff before we have to get to the not so happy stuff. Obviously, this 4th of July weekend, very different than last year.
Did anybody have any fireworks last year?
Very different than any fireworks ever because of President Biden, who, by the way, is coming to town on Wednesday.
Yeah, tomorrow he's going to be here. He's going to Crystal Lake.
He'll be at McHenry Community College up there to, talk about the wonderful government programs that he's rolling out.
Yeah, the family plan and education, Dan. It's all about it. It's all about the children. So he's coming to the state that kept kids out of the classroom the longest.
Seems appropriate. Yeah. So we're going to put together a thank you card for Joe Biden for all that he's done to give us our sparsely attended barbecues back on Independence Day weekend. Also, too, be interested to hear from you. We can memorialize those on the thank you card. How this thing, this Independence Day weekend was so much better than last year, not just because of the sparsely attended barbecue, but because it was so much less expensive to enjoy all the fixins.
Oh, that's right, because he goes grocery shopping and really knows the cost of, what, a hamburger bun and a hot dog these days?
What did you do with your extra 16 cents this year to have a little bit more of an enjoyable Independence Day weekend celebration? Pete Ducey and Jen Psaki memorialized this in advance of the weekend.
The official White House account tweeted yesterday, the cost of a 4th of July cookout is down 16 cents from last year. 16 cents?
There has been a reduction in some of the costs of key components of the 4th of July, a 4th of July barbecue. So that was what the tweet was noting.
So does the White House think that 16 cents off a barbecue has more of an impact on people's lives than gas being a dollar more this time?
If you don't like hot dogs, you may not care of the reduction of costs. You don't have to like hot dogs.
She's fine.
But a hot dog for 16 cents.
A reduction of. I will say that what we are most focused on is the fact that we've created now more than 3 million jobs since the president took office. That's what we're focused
jobs
on.
That you took
and continuing
away from
to implement additional components of his economic Build Back Better agenda. Go ahead.
312-642-5600 turnkey.pro answer line 646-36DA turnkey.pro text line. A Build Back Better is working for you. What did you do with that 16-cent bump this past weekend? I'd like to hear it.
What did you do? I mean, yeah.
You heard.
What did you spend that 16 cents on?
You heard Jen Psaki. I
what?
Mean, this has, this I mean, has real world implications. Uh-huh. You think this is all a big joke?
Well, I don't. I mean, I spent my extra money that I saved because I went to the lakefront yesterday, and it's normally $6. Shazam! It was $30. To park at the lakefront at the dog beach. So I used that money that I saved on the hot dogs and the fixins for my parking.
16 cents was put towards the parking?
Yeah. And that still didn't even scratch the surface of the parking spot.
Joe Biden and his policies, that 16 cent savings that you heard, they helped set a new world record. Joey Chestnut over the weekend at Nathan's hot dog eating contest, as Jen Psaki was right on the mark, stuck the landing, talking about the extra hot dog. And that extra hot dog proved important for Joey Chestnut. 76 dogs, breaking his own previous record of 75 dogs. That's Joey Chestnut.
And then he went to the bathroom.
Well, look, this is a guy who's...
I have a cell phone number. Should we call him? Congratulate him?
He is a one-man dynasty. That's like 14 years in a row or some such thing. But the 76 dog, it's one thing for him to win. You expect him to win. Joe Biden's policies let him gobble down that last dog.
Yeah. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Vince in St. Charles.
Good morning, guys. I hope you guys had a great Independence Day.
So with that 16 cents, how could you not?
Well, yeah, I took my time machine. I bought a candy bar in the 70s. That's something I did. Mm-hmm. And then I took my other 16 cents, and I had an unstable table in the garage, and I used it to put my table even. So that was my 16 cents.
It's so versatile, the 16 cents. Thanks for
the call. Yes, it is. Pennies.
Yeah, appreciate that. See? Mm-hmm. It's not a joke.
No, I know.
You and Peter Ducey think this is all funny games, and it's not funny. This is real for real people. Not high and mighty people at the lakefront, but for us regular folks. Tony and Roselle.
Yeah, I bought myself an artisanal ice cube for my cocktail, and it made all the difference Sunday.
Yeah. See?
For your bourbon, right, you guys?
Thanks for the call, Tony. Appreciate it. Yeah. That 16 cents, too, just on the topic of Biden coming to town. Oh, what's this I hear about Hunter Biden financing the lifestyle that Joe Biden had become accustomed to? These emails. I know this is not interesting to the D.C. press corps, the Chicago press corps that will dutifully pilgrimage up to McHenry County College and repeat whatever Joe Biden says as gospel. Chicago press corps, you know, like they do for Lightfoot and Pritzker and the whole ruling class here locally. They'll obviously do for their president, our president, but particularly their president up there in McHenry County. These emails, and gosh, with Hunter Biden and how he was making his money, call into question the relationship between Hunter and the big guy. Maybe, I don't know, Amy, since you're the only one who asks questions of politicians, maybe you go up to McHenry County College tomorrow. You skip the pro forma triple threat and
I think they're
going to
be, I think, well, Jelly Belly will be with Biden, of course. But sure. I don't know if we'll all have access because I really doubt it.
You know what Jelly Belly is going to tell him?
What?
You're sitting in my seat.
Hey, buddy, TikTok goes clock. I'm on you.
He's Wyatt Earp. He's going to Wyatt Earp him. You're sitting in my seat. 2024 comes. Get out of my seat. Seriously.
I know.
Prisco's running for president. People don't think that's serious.
I know. People don't think that he's a presidential exploratory committee out there. I've asked Jordan, his press secretary. Yeah, they didn't deny it.
No.
It's out there. It's been there for almost 2 years now.
Obviously.
He's got big hopes and aspirations, people.
He's got big everything. Look, when we scaled Illinois' model nationally with the first two Joe Obama terms, look how well that turned out. Why don't we do it again? Totally agree. Be great. These messages that Hunter was sending to his daughter. Uh-huh. You all can do what I did and pay for everything for this entire family for 30 years. This is from the laptop that may or may not be his. That is his. That was found in Delaware.
That computer store.
It's really hard, but don't worry. Unlike Pop, the big guy, I won't make you give me half your salary. What? So
can you repeat that line? I won't make you give me. What's he going to take? Not half the salary, going 30%? What are we doing?
We know from an email, June 5th, 2010, with this. So this is while he's vice president of the United States. The subject, JRB bills to Hunter from Eric Schwerin, his business partner, Rosemont Seneca. That's the firm that gets all that Chinese communist cash. He was expected to foot hefty bills to Wilmington contractors for maintenance and upkeep of the father's lakefront property, Joseph Robinette Biden. Yeah, $2,600 contract to Earl Downing for stone retaining wall, $1,475 to a painter, $1,239 for repairs to the air conditioning, so on and so forth. Huh. Is this this be a topic of inquiry from the press corps when they head up to McHenry County College on Wednesday, tomorrow? No. Probably still talking about that 16 cents residual.
You got on your dog.
How'd you do it? Things are going well.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The reality is, June over June, we're seeing a downward trend in both homicides and shootings. That was Chicago Mayor Triple Threat just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Celebrating the downward trajectory of both homicides and shootings June over June as of Father's Day
weekend. Yeah. And now it's July. Yeah. And how many shot? Now, the numbers keep changing. Went to sleep was 97 shot. Now this morning, 104 shot, 17 fatally. And of those that were shot, two were Chicago police officers, and seven were children, including a 5- and a 6-year-old who were both shot in separate incidents a mile away in the West Pullman neighborhood. And there's more. Well, there's more. I mean, Max Lewis, the University of Chicago standout, who is on his way home from an internship, going back to his place at University of Chicago, was struck in the neck by a stray bullet, and he died on July 4th. Anybody care?
Well,
I do. He was sitting on the Green Line CTA stop at 651st Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a barbaric mindset produces a barbaric culture with predictably barbaric results. So the person who was shooting in the direction of people and killed Max Lewis, a University of Chicago student, that person is one of the last links in the causal chain. One of the last links. Treated as one of the first links, actually one of the last links. And Chicago's a city locked in shackles of its own making. But look, I'm with you in the listening audience. I mean, not our listening audience per se, but think about radiating this out to the people who won't listen to anything that is not provided by the government. Hey, Lori Lightfoot says crime is decreasing. That's good enough for me.
What about Chris Caraval? National Guard soldier came home for the weekend, 19 years old, was killed at a party in the Belmont Crane neighborhood.
He fought for our country. He left the National Guard to come visit his family. He was fighting for our country. He comes to Chicago. He gets killed in the streets of Chicago.
Yeah, streets of Chicago are more dangerous than Baghdad and Afghanistan. Heard that before. They are. Think about 104 people shot. 17 killed.
I don't know. What do you want to do about it? I mean, look, thank goodness the Lightfoot David Brown safety plan went into effect this weekend, right? It could have been so much worse.
Safety plan? Was anybody downtown, by the way? Dan, you live downtown. Were you afraid you saw that mob of unruly juveniles who took over? They were lighting bottle rockets at police officers. One cop got hit in the ear with a rocket. And they were outmanned. They were outnumbered. Here's Superintendent Brown.
Over 60 arrests were made. And during that ordeal, two officers were injured.
Yeah. Officers were outnumbered and overwhelmed.
What? How could they be outnumbered and overwhelmed? There was a safety plan in effect.
The 10 p.m. curfew.
There was a safety plan in effect. How could they be outnumbered and overwhelmed?
Well, somebody wasn't monitoring social media because that's how they spread the word that, hey, we're meeting downtown at Michigan Avenue by Columbia College. And they all came.
Yeah.
Jumped on top of cars because now humping cars is the new thing.
Well, Tawny Katane made it popular. The surprise, is this a bunch of wily criminals who surprised the Chicago police? That mob action on Michigan Avenue? No. Come on. I mean, I don't know. I'm the moral indignation, whether it's from politicians or people who want to be registered as caring about 17 people being murdered this weekend, another 100 being shot. And it just comes across as performative to me these days.
But this is what it sounded like downtown. These were fireworks, but everyone thought it was gunshots and it was chaos. Did you hear any of this? I mean, this is insane. And that's just 10 seconds of it. And it went on and on throughout the night.
So that's a good example of the performative aspect I'm talking about. This is insane. Okay. I agree. And so.
Well, I've lived here, what, 40 plus all my life, grew up here. And we didn't have that when we'd go down to, say, the Taste of Chicago, watch the July 3rd fireworks, and you go back home. You don't light off your own in the streets. You listen to police officers. They tell you to move along. Well, you did.
Sigh. Eduardo at Midway.
Yeah, good morning. I'm wondering why Sloppy Joe is skipping Chicago and going to Whitey Crystal Lake. I mean, there was a white person like that student from UC getting killed, so that should matter.
Mm.
It's Max Lewis. Yeah, I mean, I think it's too dangerous. Don't you think it's too dangerous for him to come to Chicago? Why come to Chicago? It's where his fans are. These are the people who voted for him. Come on, Crystal Lake. How many people in Crystal Lake? Do they have a ton of Democrats over there in Crystal Lake and McHenry County?
Well, McHenry County, one of the few that went for Trump, certainly in Chicago Metro.
Right.
But, you know, but Biden is a uniter. So.
Oh, right.
This is, you know, all the outrage, and you'll hear it from, you'll hear the hand-wringing today from the political hacks as well as those in uniform. And you'll hear it from these dopey media types, including radio talk show hosts on the record spinning stations, which includes WLS, by the way. Or, you know, they have no idea what's going on because they got some guy from Arizona doing the morning show there.
Tucson's hot, right?
So you hear the same thing. I'm just tired of the same thing. I'm tired of the same conversation. I'm not here to play a role. I don't want people to play a role. I mean, you know, you're over the summer, and the 300 people who have been murdered as of the first of the year, around numbers, because that's what they are, numbers. I mean, this is not heaping scorn. It's just trying to make a point. Name a person who's been murdered this year in Chicago. Can you? You know, we've gone through several iterations of decrying the murder of a pre-adolescent, even like a toddler's. Can you name one? Does it really stick with you? No, it doesn't stick with you. It's just what sticks with you is the idea that this is an unsafe place and where the politicians have turned the city over to hood rats and thugs and predators. And that's true. So that's really the only thing you need to know. But, you know, I just wish, you know, come on, especially those with platforms who pretend to care while having the exact same conversation and most of them running interference for these same political ruling class types who've turned the city and, frankly, the state over to criminals, to a criminal class, the criminal class supporting the political ruling class supporting the criminal class. I'm just not going to indulge it. I mean, just come on. Otherwise, you're just another fish with a hook in your mouth.
Got a text message. These human beings are becoming just numbers and stats, and the mayor manipulates to her advantage. We rarely, if ever, as you mentioned, know their names or get follow-ups on the wounded. Chicago's crime problem is so massive that the victims actually lose their humanity.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. But name a name.
Max Lewis, but that's just because he's sitting right here, the copy in front of me, and his story is so compelling.
A week from now, University of Chicago student, you won't remember his name. He'll fade into, you know, the tapestry of the dead here to live and die in Chicago. I mean, it was, what was it, 6 weeks ago? Jemiah Harris, one-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking about her. Does anybody remember? Not really. You remember when I bring it up. Oh, yeah, I vaguely remember that thing. What? How did that happen again? And I'm not saying you should. I'm not saying I'm better because I remember. It's my job. I'm just saying the takeaway is what's important. But you're going to have politicians dance on the graves of the dead, people who are dead, largely because they have turned over the city to the criminal class. And they're going to, I mean, because the names you might remember are the names that were used as a part of political theater by the ruling class. You remember Hedia Pendleton,
right, because Michelle Obama went to her funeral and
brought mom to State of Union address because
right.
they care so much about Chicago. The Obamas do. And you may remember Darian Albert because back in the day when a kid was beaten to death with 2x4s, that used to be something newsworthy in Chicago. That used to be a stop, look, and listen moment, stop, look, and self-examine moment. It's not anymore. Can we just be honest with ourselves about this rather than having to play this dutiful role and allow politicians to dance on the graves of the dead for political cap, for political gain, for to cover their incompetence or worse, maliciousness, malicious indifference to the lives of their constituents, which has punctuated the last 30 years of mayors. All those Marxist munchkins, Daley, Tiny Dancer, Triple Threat, same deal. And we get the crocodile tears and the false bravado, and we say, yeah, we agree. Isn't it terrible? And you just rinse and repeat in perpetuity. I don't want to participate in that.
Max's mom said the bullet paralyzed her son from the neck down. He would never walk or eat again, and he likely needed a ventilator. So they said he was still alert in the hospital. He wanted to know what happened with him, and he blinked once for yes, twice for no, and that's how the mom said Max spelled out a message on a letterboard. If I have to live like this, pull the plug, please. Seriously.
Tom and Oswego.
Hey, good morning, Danny and Amy. First of all, I think the police should have it has no owner sign in all their police cars. That might solve the problem. I sympathize with the innocent people that are shot, but I don't sympathize with a lot of these residents in Chicago. They vote for this stuff. They know exactly what they're getting, and they're happy as long as Trump is out of office. They don't really care what happens. That's the way I look at it. Thanks. So they got what they wanted.
Thanks for the call, Tom.
Yeah, how is the mayor going to spin this one at 2 o'clock this afternoon? What in God's name is she going to say? And don't say, the gun's from Indiana, because it's the person that's holding the gun, Mayor Lightfoot.
What do you mean, what's she going to say? She's going to say the same thing she's been saying. You go to those press conferences.
I know.
Well, what do you expect? She's going to do the same thing that those last three, herself included, the last three Marxist munchkins have said and done. She's been in office for 2 years. What do you expect she's going to do? Come on. Dan in Naperville.
Good morning. You just talked about being honest. How come when you cover a story like this, you don't mention that every one of those people acting crazy downtown was black?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know if everyone was, but I know it was predominantly black. I'm not afraid to talk about race, Dan.
Then why
never
don't
happened.
You?
I do all the time. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I do all the time. We do all the time with respect to violent crime, which is mostly, overwhelmingly a black-on-black issue in Chicago. The only reason this gets attention, like it has been this year and last year, is when the rioting occurs and you get down into the revenue districts. And I've made that point any number of times, that the political ruling class spends all their time talking about black and brown people. They could give a rat's ass about black and brown people in the neighborhoods shooting and killing each other and innocents in between. They only care when they come downtown because the optics are bad and the economic hit is bad. If you contained it to the west and the south side, which is what previous mayors have effectively done. This mayor has completely lost control, thanks as well to Kim Fox. And we've also made the point, Dan, from Naperville, because spare me on this. Room temperature here, and I need the histrionics, that for all of the talk of systemic racism, and Triple Threat was talking about again last week, as some sort of underlying cause of the mayhem, well, I, the people in charge should do something about it then. So tell me what you're going to do to combat the boogeyman that you've identified. It's you. It's Kim Fox. It's Tony Preckwinkle. It's Tim Evans. All four of those individuals I just named with
Kwame Raoul.
Proximate, and Kwame Raoul, throw him in too, with proximate leadership positions in the criminal justice system in the city and the state are Black Americans. So what do you got? It's all Trump's fault? Okay, what else do you got? He's gone now. Verlon on the South Side.
This holiday weekend, I had to celebrate the 4th of July in conjunction with my little cousin's murder. Oh. He was shot 3 times in the head just going to pick up his girlfriend. You know, this city's beyond redemption. There's no easy answer for it. It's ran top to top, from top to bottom, by black politicians. And these laws are being made to benefit the criminal. So, you know, just forget about it, you know, because you will never feel the pain until it touches you and yours. So just let the city burn. Get out. You know what? I'm going to champion your cause, Dan. Get out of Chicago, because it's only death here. It's only death, murder, destruction. It's a lost cause.
Oh, Verlon, I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry about your cousin, Verlon.
He was only 20 years old, just beginning his life. His name was Miles Christian Kobe Mackey. Okay. At the beginning of his life, he was about to go. He was on his way probably to the pros. He played football. He was at a community college. I mean, I couldn't believe the police escort. I mean, I didn't know my little cousin was known like that. I mean, legit, by coaches. The different high schools came to talk about him that he had went to. Police knew him. All different types of police was at the funeral. It was almost 800 people at his funeral. I did not know my cousin was that blessed and made an impact on that many people. But this city's done, man.
Well, that's a nice tribute to your cousin, all the people that turned down. Again, sorry about that, Verlon. Thanks for sharing that.
I'm still
Don and McHenry.
Hey, God bless you, Verlon. Man, tough loss. And it just kind of amplifies my point. Is Dan, you talk about the politicians. Do they really care? I was just reviewing the stats. Between 2019 and 2020, 22 unarmed blacks were killed by police, and we had 17 people killed in one weekend in Chicago. And which one gets more attention? We obviously know the answer. It's not even close. And so people like Miles don't get the attention when 17 in one weekend just in Chicago versus 22 in the whole country over 2 years. It just baffles me how the media continues to spin a narrative that is just so destructive to our whole country, but particularly to the black community. It's heartbreaking.
Thanks for the call, Don. Yeah, Chicago, this is what a city looks like when Black Lives Matter and the other identitarians win. Congratulations. What did you win?
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, 41 COVID-related deaths. That's yesterday.
In the country?
Yeah.
Oh, that is...
At least 140 people died in shootings across the U.S. over the 4th of July weekend. And Illinois contributing, Chicago contributing more than 10% of those deaths. The continued zeitgeist in the direction of vaccination from our public health politicians, as well as our federal politicians, as well as some state ones, and particularly a useful governor for the D.C. press corps has been West Virginia Governor, Republican now, was Democrat, flipped parties, Jim Justice, who was on with Martha Raddatz on this week over the weekend, Sunday, and had this to say about the import of vaccinations, the struggle to get to Joe Biden's magic number, and what he thinks will have to happen for people who don't want to get vaccinated to change their mind.
Let's go back to who's not getting vaccinated. The statistics will show it's poverty, race, and you just look at the map, it's a lot of red states.
Well, I mean, there's some truth to that and everything, you know, because, you know, the red states probably have a lot of people that, you know, are very, very conservative in their thinking, and they think, well, I don't have to do that. But they're not thinking right. When it really boils right down to it, they're in a lottery to themselves. You know, we have a lottery, you know, that basically says, if you're vaccinated, we're going to give you stuff. Well, you've got another lottery going on. And it's the death lottery.
The death lottery.
Martha, I hate to say this, but what would put them over the edge is an awful lot of people die. The only way that's really going to happen is a catastrophe that none of us want. And so we just got to keep trying, though.
Mm-hmm. Is that right? Are you, if you're not vaccinated, you haven't vaccinated your toddler yet, you've entered yourself into a death lottery. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. And Governor Justice has been one of the worst offenders to something I find completely pernicious, which is this gamifying getting vaccinated. I'll give you concert tickets. I'll give you a chance to win a shotgun. I'll give you whatever.
A flatbed truck, a Ford 150. I mean, he's done everything he can, including getting his dog involved. He's got this bulldog named Baby Dog. And at the beginning, this is his first thing. If you don't do it for me, do it for the dog.
If you won't do it for your family, you've got to get vaccinated for Baby Dog.
And he puts the dog
on. That's all there is to it. Now, she wants you vaccinated so badly. And she's going to absolutely be the one to lead us through on this, all these incentives. And without any question, she'll give you a high five right now, but you have got to get yourself vaccinated.
Did Baby Dog get vaccinated? He's asinine. It's asinine. It's insulting. It's insulting the intelligence of his constituents, and that sort of gamifying or homespun bull jive from politicians is insulting to constituents in states, including Illinois, all over the country, cities like Chicago, all over the country. Oh, by the way, when you want to actually look at the data, since we're so science and data driven, all of our betters on TV and our duly elected politicians, go look at the New York Times coronavirus dashboard and look at the daily deaths per 100,000 and then look at the vaccination numbers. You have a state like... I don't know. Pick one. Because you'll hear from that yapping terrier Chuck Todd talking to Tony Fauci. Would you go to Mississippi right now? All right. Mississippi, 30% are vaccinated.
Right.
The death per 1,000 per 100,000 is 0.09. By comparison, let's say Colorado, 52% vaccinated. The daily death per 100,000, 0.11. By the way, this is like a lottery because the chances are, I'm being hyperbolic here, similar in terms of dying from COVID or winning a lottery or a shotgun or a flatbed truck. So, you know, the delta between 30% in Mississippi and 52%, actually Colorado's got a slightly higher death rate per 100,000. And again, I'm not coming from a place of being anti-vaccine. People get vaccinated. I get it, particularly in certain cohorts, at certain age groups, plus underlying conditions. I get it. It's fine. We've reported before and we'll continue to say, overall, generally safe. Are there adverse outcomes? There absolutely are. Do we have a handle on the scope? We don't. This is a real-time gathering of information. And, of course, because you have propagandizers on TV, and as public health TV doctors, they're intending to obfuscate an honest distillation of what we know about the adverse outcomes of the vaccine so you can do real concrete risk assessments, particularly when you're down age demographic and you're otherwise healthy in terms of more risk for an adverse outcome of the vaccine or more risk getting COVID infected.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. And one thing I noticed, I mean, I was in Springfield, Missouri, and then drove up to the Ozarks, and these are Delta super spreaders. That's what the mainstream media is letting you know.
Right.
And but we're shaming our fellow Americans. Like, Americans are turning on each other. People were walking around the hotel with masks on. They're like, well, so why are you wearing a mask? I'm just curious. Well, Delta is very prevalent here. Like, is anyone getting tested? So I read this article because I was just confused, because everyone I talked to said, where are your testing centers? How do people know that this is a Delta, that the Delta variant's here? They're checking, they're taking fecal matter from the sewer lines and testing that, because you shed the virus by going to the bathroom. And it's what they do at University of Arizona. There's one dorm where they check the sewer lines. They do that in the Netherlands to see how many people, and they're doing this. They're taking your poop. I thought your poop is your property, or when you flush it down the toilet, it's not, it's the government's. I mean, it's so strange because people are not sick.
Okay.
Well, I'm just, I know, so, that's
so
a little.
Let's keep them down there in the sewer. Let's keep them down there with their descent into madness and sewer lines. Yeah. Fine. The top line on the Delta variant is maybe it's a little bit more contagious. There's no indication that.
But it's not deadly. It's more contagious. That's what Dr. Awardi said. She goes, we think it's more contagious, yeah, but it's not. Hospitalizations are not up.
Correct.
So we got to
the early indications are that the vaccine works against the Delta variant. So if you've been vaccinated, which more than half the country has had the double shots, then
it's 90% effective.
Yeah. I mean, again, is it 100%? No, because nothing in life is 100%. This is all just hysteria. And of course, I mean, you got to go to the chief if you're going to talk about hysteria, the chief of inducing hysteria. He is Dr. Tony Fauci. Have you heard of this gentleman? He was on Meet the Press with that yapping terrier, Chuck Todd, and had this to say about, yeah, CDC says if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. But, you know, why don't you do so anyway?
Oh, God.
Well, let's talk about a specific here. We know Mississippi is one of the lowest. I believe it's the lowest vaccinated, has the lowest vaccinated rate in the country. If you were in Biloxi, Mississippi right now, Dr. Fauci, would you be wearing a mask? You're fully vaccinated, but would you be wearing a mask in Biloxi, Mississippi?
I think there would be a good reason to do that. I mean, because there, as we've said so often, that vaccines are not, even as good as they are and highly effective, nothing is 100%. And if you put yourself in an environment in which you have a high level of viral dynamics and a very low level a vaccine, you might want to go the extra step and say, when I'm in that area where there's a considerable degree of viral circulation, I might want to go the extra mile to be cautious enough to make sure that I get the extra added level of protection, even though the vaccines themselves are highly effective.
That's why people are walking around with masks in Southwest Missouri.
This guy is a treasure, isn't he? Tony Fauci, isn't he a treasure? He just clinging to this. And as far as that yapping terrier, Chuck Todd, who was moralizing to the nation yet last week, we played his Jeremiad against the public who isn't vaccinated. The same. Well, I just gave you Mississippi versus Colorado. What would Chuck Todd say to that? We'll never know, because he doesn't have anybody on except echo chamber guests. It's pathetic.
And people, keep in mind, they're sending federal response teams to these areas. In Mississippi, Springfield, Missouri, places like that, to try and encourage people to get vaccinated. When do we have a freedom of choice in America?
Meanwhile, anybody speaking out is being shut down, best as the combine of big government and big tech can do. Dr. Robert Malone, we interviewed him last week or the week before.
Oh, yeah.
He is.
What happened? No.
He's had experience. He says that he is one of the inventors of mRNA vaccines. I mean, in addition to his other medical work, which is substantial, he got yanked off of LinkedIn. His personal account shut down without explanation.
What?
The historic record of what I have done, stated, figured out, and when over time is a key part of establishing my credibility and track record as a professional. That has been completely erased and arbitrarily without warning or explanation, because he did it when we talked to him, has warned that these mRNA vaccines carry risks that are being downplayed by the likes of Tony Fauci. No notice, no warning, never had any issues with LinkedIn, but he's yanked because he is not queuing to the orthodoxy, and he's got a bunch of things like MD, a bunch of initials after his name like MD, and that's a problem because, you know, God forbid somebody believe somebody who's a medical doctor and an infectious disease expert, even a virologist, who's not named Tony Fauci or one of Tony Fauci's merry band of backup singers, right? This is fun, too, since he brought up the mask issue. Fleckas Talk is a YouTube star, Fleckas Talk. He went to Washington Square Park in New York to ask people who are vaccinated why they're still wearing a mask. And so this is instructive because, you know, the mentality in New York is not going to be any different than the mentality you see from similar people behaving similarly in Chicago.
So you're still wearing your mask, I noticed. Are you vaccinated as well?
Yeah, I am.
So what's the thought process there?
The thought process? I don't have one right now.
I don't have one, yeah.
Next question.
What'd you say?
Next question.
Next question.
Next question. Why are you wearing a mask if you're fully vaccinated?
What's the thought process? I don't have a thought process. Thank you. I appreciate your candor more.
I noticed you are still wearing a mask. Are you vaccinated as well?
Yeah.
So what's the thought process there?
I mean, because, you know, I'm going to crowd, so I'm not really sure what's going on. You know, that's an extra protection. But
are you scared?
No, I'm not scared about that.
Yeah, you are.
Because the outside transmissions are very low. New York Times even said that there's not even one documented case of someone catching COVID from being outside.
Right.
And then you've been vaccinated, so that should help too.
Right.
Do you want to take the mask off?
Yeah, of course, you know. I mean, but that should be up to me, right?
You can't take
at the end of the day, I decide, you know, to wear a mask or not. Yeah.
Do you want to take it off for the camera?
No, I'm okay.
Okay. All right. Enjoy your safety, sir. What do you think about some of the sanctions being lifted and the city kind of opening back up for the summer?
I think it's a good thing. I'm a little bit wary still, but I think overall definitely a lot of sanctions being lifted is good for the city.
I notice you are wearing a mask still. Are you vaccinated as well?
I'm vaccinated, yes.
What's the thought process there?
I just, when I'm around a lot of people, I tend to just keep it on because I don't notice it that much. So
is it more for them to feel comfortable or for you to feel comfortable?
I guess for me to feel comfortable mostly, but also other people.
It's always good to wear a mask because we don't know what can happen. We're still in a pandemic, but we're all vaccinated here. So
so you're vaccinated as well?
Yeah, for sure.
What's the thought process there?
I mean, like, we should believe that vaccine is, like, good right now because, well, the government is telling us to get vaccinated, and we should believe that it's good for us, and we should all get vaccinated for sure.
Have you been vaccinated?
Yes.
How long ago was that?
My last shot, I think, was in, March 7th.
Oh. Okay, cool. The mask you're wearing is a cloth mask, not the safest compared to, like, N95s.
Exactly.
And an outside transmission is very rare. New York Times said there hasn't been one case of outside transmission. Is the mask something that's just over precaution, or are you thinking it's actually going to keep you safe?
In some ways, I don't think it's going to keep me that safe, but it's like maybe one extra layer. It's also like for respect for people that, you know, for whatever reason have compromised immune systems. I don't think it protects the person too much that's wearing it, but I guess, like I said, it's an extra layer.
They're brainwashed and they don't want to get rid of the passy, like just a 2-year-old who's just clinging onto that pacifier. Can't take it off.
You can't reach him. You can't reach them. And interestingly, you can't reach them with the science or data.
They're still not listening. You could just tell.
Wayne in Kankakee. Hey, Wayne.
I'm 60. Yes. How you doing today?
Good.
I'm 65 years old. I'll be 66 in September. I'm what they call a borderline diabetic, and I got high blood pressure and all the other goodies that come along with age, but I don't care if they offer me $1 million. They are not putting that needle in my arm for any reason, and I think Dr. Fauci is a complete moron.
Is you're not going to get vaccinated because your lack of...
I don't trust it.
I don't trust it.
And I very highly doubt that Kamala Harris got it. I doubt that Biden got the vaccine. I doubt that Fauci got the vaccine because he's behind...
Well,
no, I believe that they actually got the vaccine.
Well, and also Trump got the vaccine.
Yeah, and so did Melania.
And he's also advocating for the vaccine. So, I mean, you know.
Did they tell you that there's over 6,100 people that have died from the vaccine?
Well, I understand, but
I heard it on the Global News Alert Hour.
Have you gotten COVID?
No, I'm healthy as a horse, man. Mm-hmm. I take supplements to keep my immune system strong. I don't play around. I eat healthy,
sure, I'm a little overweight, but I quit smoking. So
that's good.
12 years ago now.
Okay.
So I'm proud of that. But, no, I'll never get the vaccine. I've been in college. I went to a big gathering in Moments the other night for the fireworks show. There's nobody there with masks on. I don't wear a mask. I haven't worn a mask. I'm not going to wear a mask. I don't believe they're variant crap. It's all just scare tactics to try and make old people like me scared. And they're not scaring me because I'm smarter than that. And talk about people with the masks on. We got people around here that walk around, ride around on bicycles outside with a mask on, drive around in their car with a mask on. And I just think to myself, my God, what are you people thinking?
Thank you.
Look so stupid. If you only knew how stupid you looked.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you for your time. I'm never getting a vaccine.
All right.
And that's your choice.
Thanks for the call.
I got
Wayne.
The vaccine. I'm not an anti-vaxxer.
That's sort of the other end of the spectrum on with underlying conditions like that, but okay. Therese on the north side.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. You know, if someone is bribing you to do something, doesn't that raise a red flag? I mean, if they're, you know, here's, like you were saying, free concert tickets, you know, a free beer, whatever. I mean, that's just strange to me right there. And I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I get the flu shot every year because I choose to.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Tracy. Yeah,
it is surreal. There is some, like, apocalyptic movie theme going on here.
Well, I think this is really... Rather than something nefarious afoot, I think it speaks to their attitude about you, the constituent.
I think we're stupid.
I think that's how little they think of you. We have to give them stuff for them to do what we say is the right thing. We can't just have an adult conversation with adults. We have to treat them like children and give them a prize to do what we want them to do.
Like Mayor Lightfoot never trusted us to do the right thing. That's why she shut down the lakefront, because she didn't trust us to spread out.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We just completed our map-making process here in Illinois, at least legislative map-making, where the...
So fair.
Democrat socialist cartographers did a nice job of carving up the state to throw a lot of Republican incumbents, the few that are left, into the same districts to compete against one another and not do the same for Democrat socialist incumbents, of course. But that's the way it goes. Those are the vagaries of controlling the General Assembly in Illinois and the state legislatures and governor's mansions the country over, because map making, just like election administration, is a state and local matter. For more on that and how it may be changing, Michigan perhaps leading the way, this would be really interesting. Stephen Markman is a retired Michigan Supreme Court justice and professor of con law at Hillsdale College, one of the few colleges that I say is okay to send your children to. One of the few. I can name them probably on two hands. And I don't include my alma mater. Professor Markman, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks. It's nice to be here. I look forward to having the children of Illinois in my classroom over the next couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. Very good. As I understand, going from memory here, the Supreme Court standards when it comes to map making for legislative districts, congressional districts, compactness, contiguousness, respect for municipal boundaries, where population equality, if you will, equal population and race are sort of the two overriding factors that the court has looked at in its jurisprudence on the topic. And now, according to this piece that you wrote for the Journal, the state of Michigan is looking to do something completely different with respect to map making. They can respect race and they can respect population equality, But they're going to have to necessarily walk away from things like compactness and contiguousness if they want to do this map making based on communities of interest, right?
Well, it's a somewhat complicated issue, and I try to simplify it as much as I can. I mean, obviously, putting together congressional and legislative districts, which is what Michigan is doing now, just as Illinois has done it, is one of the most important thing that a free people can do in a representative self-governmental context. And historically, in Michigan, as in almost all other states, the decision makers have been the state legislature. Out of concern for a variety of things like a gerrymandering and self-interested districts and partisanship, the people of Michigan in 2018 voted in a new system. They created a commission, a so-called citizens commission, that would be literally selected out of a hat, literally selected randomly, that would be making this decision instead of the state legislature. And that's what we have right now. And that citizens commission, which is neither elected nor subject to removal, like, of course, the state legislatures are if the people don't like what they're doing, is in the process of considering how to construct the new districts in Michigan right now. And that's a matter of some controversy, I believe.
And the commission has how many members, and do they lean more right or more left, or is it split evenly?
Well, it's supposed to have 13 commissioners, and they're divided among people with Republican backgrounds, Democratic backgrounds, and independent backgrounds. So there's an effort to establish some kind of partisan balance on the commission. That's correct.
Yeah, but the thing here that is perfect for this age of identitarianism is this commission is looking to draw maps based on communities of interest rather than on geography.
That's right, Dan. The big controversy is over a term in the new constitutional provision, the community of interest. Hillsdale College says the community of interest has always been defined, and it is subject to a long history of definition in our state, as geographic communities, counties, cities, townships, and villages, and their boundaries. What instead we have in the new provision is a community of interest that's defined along group lines. We really have not had a history of racial considerations in the way that I think you suggested a few minutes ago, but that is one of the new considerations. The new districts in Michigan will consist of communities of interest that may be defined along either the traditional geographic lines I just discussed or along a new concept defined by the University of Michigan in a report in which those lines are based upon group factors, identity relationships, and affinities, interest groups. For example, race, religion, and ethnicity are in fact explicit considerations that will go into making those districts, even though our Constitution says in two places that generally those kinds of considerations are not appropriate in the state of Michigan.
But what we have in practice is that already in so many places, don't we? I mean, I just point to a famous district that happens to be in Chicago. Of course it does. Louis Gutierrez's former district, now Chuy Garcia's congressional district, which is a horseshoe around the city of Chicago that picks up as many pockets of Latino population as possible. You know, without being explicit about it, the gerrymandering accomplishes that anyway. And those sorts of bizarrely drawn districts have been, upheld as constitutional.
Well, you're right. I'm not questioning what you're saying. You're absolutely right about that. But nonetheless, it's never been done explicitly in the way that the University of Michigan report is now encouraging it to be done.
And what do you think
the idea that we should be defining people and creating districts in which they're consolidated and aggregated on the basis of race and ethnicity and religion just doesn't seem to me, at least, or to Hillsdale College, to be much of a reform.
No.
Instead of being a step backward.
No, I agree with that. And so take it a step further. And if that were to be affected and upheld, what do you think the implications are for such a basis for map making, for district making?
Well, I think one of the effects will be that the people who are hoping to get beyond a system in which partisanship was a significant factor will find such partisanship being perpetuated and continued, but obscured or camouflaged on the basis of racial, ethnic, and religious considerations. And I think you're right, too, that you'll see a lot more gerrymandering than when you have districts based upon geographical communities. When instead you see districts based upon identity communities and, special interest group communities, you have to squiggle and snake around in order to have districts that capture all the people that you want to place within them.
You know, what's ironic, too, is that those proponents of this sort of racial gerrymandering or communities of interest gerrymandering, they end up marginalizing their representation. They end up undermining the very sort of counting by race or some other demographic they want to count by, because it turns out, unbeknownst to them, that white people will vote for a black representative and black people will vote for a white representative, that the great span of the American people is a lot less race and identity obsessed than these political hacks making maps.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that we're getting experts involved in this process very deeply, even though the process was designed to replace the state legislature with ordinary citizens. Instead, the ideas, the redistricting ideas that the University of Michigan report has introduced in the process are so complicated and so arcane that there's no way that these citizens or much of any other group can make reasonable redistricting decisions with having to consult with the so-called experts.
You know, Elbridge Gerry, the governor of Massachusetts around the time of the revolution, from which gerrymandering comes, he's a complicated figure. You know, I don't know what to make of him. I don't know if we should erect a statue or count him as one of the worst of our founders, because on the one hand, he was, he signed the Declaration of Independence. He signed the Articles of Confederation. He was opposed to political parties. So I'm with you so far. And then gerrymandering. Oh, he was so close. I don't know what to. Is it perhaps a topic of conversation for your classes, your con law classes at Hillsdale?
I appreciate that. Thank you, Dan.
Professor Stephen Markman, retired Michigan Supreme Court Justice, professor of con law at Hillsdale College, where you should consider sending your children. Professor Markman, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Dan. Have a good day. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560 The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Interesting, the commentaries on the 4th of July and Independence Day over the weekend really speaks to the fissure between the Democrat socialists and the center right in this country. I mean, I don't think it is as wide as the op-ed pages of various outlets would so indicate. And there's some polling to suggest that that is correct. But nonetheless, again, we're talking about motivated minorities that determine the course of history, and the radical left is highly motivated. So what did they say about the 4th of July? Well, New York Times think piece by a staff writer there, Sarah Maslin-Nur, a 4th of July symbol of unity that may no longer unite. Talking about the flag. What was once a unifying symbol, there's a star for each state, after all, is now alienating to some. Its stripes now fault lines between the people who kneel while the Star-Spangled Banner plays and those for whom not pledging allegiance is an affront. It's made the celebration of 4th of July of patriotic bunting and cakes with blueberries and strawberries arranged into Old Glory into another cleft in a country that seems no longer quite so indivisible under a flag threatening to fray. Ooh, nice rhetorical flourish by this reporter, in quotation marks, at the New York Times. Is that so? What did you see at your 4th of July celebration? How many people took a knee if you had an anthem as part of that celebration? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Or did you have anybody like Congresswoman Cori Bush, a newly minted member of the Socialist Spice Girls?
Yeah, St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
She said this land is stolen land and black people still aren't free.
Yeah.
So no need to celebrate. And Maxine Waters pretty much backed up and said the same thing.
So the land is stolen. Black people aren't free. When they say that they talk about freedom on this day, they're referring to freedom for white people only.
White men.
Cori Bush makes 1.5 times the median salary, median household income in this country as a member of Congress. She's not free. And then, of course, that prompts the question, if black people aren't free in America, then what specifically would it take to free them? I'd love to have that conversation with Cori Bush. But, you know, she's one of those people who hides on Twitter. She doesn't engage in debate or discussion. What would it take to make them free? And by the way, when you talk about black people, are black people all similarly situated? I love this black community stuff. Is the black doctor or engineer in a leafy suburb similarly situated to a black American who's a dependent on of the state on the west or south side of Chicago? I don't think so. I don't think so. Interesting. I'm just curious of the way we talk about these things and the way that the identitarian left does. I think should be challenged more often. Building on Ms. Noor's piece and the rants by Cori Bush and
Maxine,
No Justice, No Peace Maxine on Twitter, we had we have this from Turay, the one-named former MSNBC contributor. F the 4th of July. This is at thegrio.com, which is a real black nationalist hate America rag. F the 4th of July. In a world where we officially recognize Juneteenth, that great new holiday sits on the calendar, casting a long shadow over Independence Day, making it look like a hypocrite and a damn fool. Independence for who? It wasn't independence for black people, for our ancestors. So why would we celebrate the 4th of July? And it isn't merely that Americans owned slaves at the time when America became independent. It's that slavery was completely wrapped up in the movement to become independent. There's stylized revision of American history, 1619 Project style. He goes on, America has never been the land of liberty and justice for all. Those words have never meant anything to black people. Again, the self-appointed spokesman for black people, Turay. But we have fought to make America more American, more free and more just. We are critical to America moving closer to living up to its promise. We are critical to America, but still, F the 4th of July for me. That's Turay. Huh.
And Maxine Waters' point of contention is like, look, when our founding fathers were signing the Declaration of Independence, 500,000 slaves remained property.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a different version.
Sense of our past, I get that.
Different version of understanding this country's history and promise and present, by the way. It's interesting how little Cori Bush and Maxine Waters and Turay and the Hate America crowd like to talk about America in 2021 or the trajectory of American history. Don't want to talk about that so much, including, by the way, the founding documents and the trajectory it put the Western world on with respect to slavery, which is the abolition of it, largely. Ozzie Guillen. Our friend Ozzie.
Yes, Ozzie.
Ozzie brought us a world championship in
2005.
Yeah, swept the Astros, you remember?
I was there. I loved it.
And he brought us this on the occasion of Independence Day, talking with Chuck Garfine on White Sox pregame. Ozzie had this to say about America as a Venezuelan immigrant.
You became an American citizen. You were born in Venezuela and what this country means to you. And it was, got the date right here, January of 2006. That's when you became an American citizen. How about this day? What did that mean to you that day?
It's special. People, they don't know how hard that is. How many people die, how many people open the thing, how many people want to be American. It's a very honor for me to do that.
Yeah, you're really emotional right now. Why are you so emotional and tearing up out
now? I don't know. Opportunities, man. Opportunities. Opportunity opened the door for me and being great. I've been living in this country for a long time. Give my family a great cause and open the door for them to be who they are.
You didn't know that video was coming. Maybe that caught you for my advice.
Maybe that was.
Yeah.
It was funny, but I don't cry that often. I'm a very tough guy, but seeing that, I know how that means to me and my family.
Yes.
Becoming a citizen is what he was referring to, the ceremony that they played a snippet from.
He's proud to be an American.
Opportunities, man. Opportunities. Which is why the world wants to come to America.
Well, a new poll showed only 36 of respondents between ages 18 to 24 said they're very or extremely proud to be American. 36%.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
The issues and insights tip poll. So there's only one demographic that is not majority proud to be an American, and that's the 18 to 24 year old. However, 68% of adults say they are very or extremely proud to be an American, another 15% moderately proud. And that's across every demographic. So you just heard from Teray and all these self-styled spokesmen for the black community or for the black and brown community or for the identitarian ideologues. Does Cori Bush, does Teray represent majority opinion in the communities they pretend to represent? No. Black, 55%, extremely very proud to be an American. Hispanic, 57%. The interesting thing, too, as much as you have the college degreed, this idea that this neo-feudalism track that we're on, the real separator is a college degree. Well, college degree are more 75% extremely very proud to be an American. Only high school, 62%. Conservative, 81%. Liberal, 55%. Self-identified. Republicans, 85%. Democrats, 64%. Self-identified. And again, you go upper income where you have all of this, guilt driving public policy, all these guilty pee hats in the suburbs. $75,000 or more a year in household income, 81%. Extremely very proud. Under 30, 56%. Why? Because they're told they're a victim all the time, in part, I would argue. And again, every age demographic, 60% or higher, except 18 to 24-year-olds. And then, of course, that speaks to what's happening to 18, 24-year-olds. They, 18 to 24-year-olds of today, have spent the last 20 years from the cradle to present, outside of their homes at least, immersed in a culture that says America is the bad guy.
And look what we did. And who doesn't endanger remembering the sins of our past? No one. We're not forgetting about them. But why? There's such hesitancy to celebrate the 4th of July this year. Didn't you feel it? Anybody? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Mm-hmm. Lou Holtz writing about the 4th for FoxNews.com. Coach Lou, on July 4th weekend, these truths still ring true about America. We must fight for them. What's a four-letter word these days? Meritocracy. Every race, every ethnicity, and every point of origin was represented among our players across my career. They all had two things in common. The first is they were passionately committed to making Notre Dame football the country's best, and a few times they succeeded. The second was that each of them earned their spot. Yes, they were diverse, but the diversity wasn't the reason for their presence. Every single player who wore the Notre Dame uniform deserved to do it. That's meritocracy. That's what, but he goes on to say in typical Lou Holtz fashion. Why use the $5 word? I was born in West Virginia, raised in Ohio. Out there, we just call it the American way. Meritocracy under assault by those same who suggest that they represent a majority of the country that they actually don't in terms of their attitude. Important to note. By the way, Lou Holtz calls to mind that great commencement speech he gave. Everybody needs four things in their life. Something to do.
Someone to love. Something to look forward to.
And
a job to go to.
Something to believe in.
Something to believe in, yes.
Yes. For Lou, that something to believe in is called God. Michael on the South Side.
Hi. Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. You know, to be honest with you, I got to ask, if the 4th of July is so bad for black people, why did I have to listen to the firecrackers all weekend long? On Sunday, my neighborhood sounded like a war zone. Hmm.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Michael. Well, that was probably white people trying to pollute the air for black people. And I cite none other than National Geographic. The hidden toll of July 4th fireworks. Fireworks July 4th? Racist. Using crowdsourced data from Home Air Quality Monitor, scientists found that vulnerable people and communities of color are disproportionately exposed to air pollution from fireworks celebrations. No mention of whether or not they participate in those communities in fireworks celebrations, but okay. Urban areas, higher rates of asthma, more older residents, greater percentage of children under 10. These are areas that also tend to have more black and Hispanic residents than those with less 4th of July air pollution. For your everything is racist file, I won't indulge the silliness any longer. I'll move on. Judy in Lamont.
Good morning, guys. I am happy to report two things. I went to church for the first time in quite a while where we could go in and no mask and no anything. So that was wonderful. But our little church in Lamont, I'm going to give a shout out to Father Rorick. He was not holding back. I mean, he's so good. And he just was talking about our freedoms and what we have. And I don't remember the gentleman that he cited, but the 9 steps to go from freedom to totalitarianism. And he listed every step off. All 9, and he said that the gentleman that he was citing, that we were about on step 6. So, you know, people be aware, be awake, enjoy your freedoms. And then after the homily, he said, let's everybody sing God Bless America. Everybody did. Everybody clapped. And, you know, it was just a beautiful thing. It was like that little sliver of hope that, you know, it's going to be okay. We're going to trust in God and it'll be okay.
Sounds like Alinsky's 8 Steps to Socialism. Thanks for the call, Judy. Appreciate it. Mike in Yorkville.
Dan, Amy, good morning.
Morning.
Hello.
Hey, your question that you were talking about, which was, did we see any pushback for 4th of July or anything? But when you started going out into the far, I would say, western suburbs, rural areas, away from the city, you know, we had seen a boom in people wanting to come see the 4th of July fireworks, celebrations, and everything else. There was no pushback. Now, I expected to see a pushback from places like Evanston, Elgin, Chicago, you know, and we did see that. And then the second part, Amy was talking about, I hate when people talk about saying the sins of our past. I would like for us to start saying the sacrifices we've made in this country.
Well, I was referring to thanks, slavery, Mike. But yeah, I mean, back to so many municipalities canceled their fireworks show because of COVID. Evanston, Glendale Heights, Hoffman Estates, Oak Park.
Excuse me. We talked about this. You think Evanston canceled their 4th of July fireworks because of COVID? That's a lie. That's a lie.
Because safety reasons?
Keep processing. Ideological reasons to raise F the 4th of July? You think that's the prevailing attitude among the city elders in Evanston? Yes, it is. They have the LGBTQ and reparations and so on and so forth. Why they're canceling 4th of July for COVID? No, they're not. They're canceling 4th of July because they're anti-American Marxist ideologues. That's why. Kip in Stillman Valley.
Hello, everyone out there in radio land. Listen, I don't see the division within the races, and there's proof out there. Just look who voted for Trump amongst the races. And over the 4th of July weekend, what I had seen is all races has gotten together. I'm not in a city. I live in between corn and bean fields. And I'll tell you what, most wonderful place in the world to live is here in America, and it is for all. Not all illegally, all legally, all the citizens. And that for once, they, as citizens came together, I see it as citizens of the United States of America and believe in America. The only thing that you get from the word of mouth through the news media and the ones that control everything have the power to not let you express this, that United States citizens believe in their country and they love their country.
Thanks for the call, and, Kip. And that's borne out in that polling that we referenced, except for those 18 to 24-year-olds who were losing. Dan in Salem, Wisconsin.
If the people who reject this country, as it is, they should reject the welfare and the food cards that they get every month. Maybe they should try Haiti out. That might work better for them.
Well, thanks for the call, Dan. I mean, Cori Bush, this socialist spice girl from St. Louis, is just remarkable. I mean, she literally is a caricature of a... member of INCSOC from 1984. She literally is saying black people aren't free. Mm-hmm. And what does she propose? Government dependency. Government dependency is freedom to Cori Bush and the socialists in this country. It's just remarkable how prescient Orwell was, I guess. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Oh, hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Thank you for taking a call. I was at a little town in Michigan there. And man, I'll tell you, they all came out. There was a parade. We all went to the parade. There was a little ragtag band that was local VFW put together. Ring. They sounded like $1 million doing a national anthem. Everybody stand up. We all drove there with golf carts and stuff to go to this parade. And everybody stood up and put their hands on their heart. And basically afterwards clapped and whistled. Oh, man, it was great. So there's people all
Kaepernick
over the
wasn't
place.
There. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for the call, Craig. Yeah. Appreciate it.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Mike Manapkin runs the Democratic House floor for 30-plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay, no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when. You're moving out.
Dan and Amy, looking at the New York Times dashboard again. Total COVID cases the last week, 10 days really, June 22nd to July 5th, 744 Cook County. 7-day rolling average of COVID-related deaths.
In Illinois, yes.
No, Cook County.
Cook County, okay.
One 7-day average. The weekend violence, 106 shot, 17 dead.
So what's more of a problem? COVID cases or gun violence?
For more on this, Ted Dabrowski joins us, president of WirePoints, wirepoints.org. Ted, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Morning. One of the things that we talk a lot about here, but it's still not talked about enough, is okay, police on their heels and Triple Threat and David Brown are imperfectly trying to implement some sort of George Kennan policy of containment that we've seen from previous mayors and police chiefs. But on the other side of the justice system, you still have this lagging problem. We don't have a prosecutor who wants to prosecute criminals. We don't have a court system that for much of the past year, including into this year, has been functioning. And so to the extent that we have judges who do want to sentence criminals who are convicted, which is a problem, we don't clearly have enough in Cook County Circuit Court, the courts aren't operating and moving cases, even in the rare instance that the Cook County State's Attorney is intent on doing so.
Yeah, I think, you know, this major chaos going on, and you're seeing that come out where Lightfoot is complaining about Evans, about Fox. You know, they're starting to fight with each other and effectively eat each other. And that starts telling you that the whole thing is not working, because in theory they're on the same side, and yet, you know, they can't figure out how to prosecute, how to keep people off the streets. And it's become a big mess. And I don't know how it straightens itself out, because, you know, they're in control of the whole thing. They've got all the power in every position right now to fix this, not to fix the actual crime problem, but to make it smoother, let's call it, in how it operates. And right now they don't have that.
But it's
and that's
not
why they're angry with each other.
Yeah, but it's not as if, you know, 26 and Cal is busting at the, you know, at the seams. There's room. It's not a capacity in jail issue. And I know they're trying to vacate some people because of COVID, but why? I mean, why not? So we had 61 people arrested on the 4th of July, who were some for gun possession, some for resisting arrest, because there was a flash mob that attacked the city. Of those 61 people, how many do you think their charges are going to be dropped? Well,
oh, geez. Who knows, right? But who knows? Yeah, but the thing is that they're struggling to resume criminal trials, all this stuff, and you know, COVID is effectively done as it relates to opening up all this. There's no excuse now. It's the same thing as the unemployment offices. Why are they still closed? I think we talked about that last time, but they continue to hide behind COVID, and it's unexplainable. Other than it's just sheer ineptitude or corruption, I'm not sure which one.
Mm-hmm. And same with the DMV. I don't know if you've seen the lines wrapped around the DMV at the Thompson Center and other places, because they're not having a full staff of employees because they want to socially distance. Well, we don't need to socially distance anymore.
No, yeah, I took my son about 2 months ago, and yeah, it wrapped all the way around a building that I was at. I think it's out in Schaumburg. 3-hour wait, because we're socially distanced, outside.
You know what we need there in the Secretary of State's office? We need a failed mob banker to become the Secretary of State,
that's right,
to get that office up and running like it should, don't you think, Ted?
Well, yeah, don't we have that everywhere?
Well, we got
Ali G's coming.
We got we got Jesse White still in his custodial phase of his career.
We won't put him there.
But Ali G, that should be good. Broadway.
He
Bank,
wants the job. Yeah.
Broadway Bank bailout recipient. For those of you who have no institutional memory, which mainly I'm talking about the Chicago Press Corps. Ted, Rich Miller, who is one of the state's biggest cheerleaders for the status quo, wrote this recently. You can't, on the one hand, constantly harp about the decades of Illinois credit rating downgrades and then blithely dismiss the first bit of good news, good Illinois rating news since George Ryan was governor. It's okay to step away from the Illinois is awful screaming for a moment, Ted, in the wake of last week's upgrade of Illinois' bond rating by Moody's Investor Service. While not the end of our problems by any means, what a concession. This signals yet another important fiscal turning point. The Moody's upgrade to, you know, one step above junk, is that a real fiscal turning point, as Rich Miller suggests?
No, you know, this is the whole thing. We wrote, kind of opposed the whole celebration, because it's kind of like taking a deathly sick patient or, you know, very ill patient, and then, you know, giving them tons of cocaine and they're up and running around, but they're not any better, right? They're just on a high, and that's what Illinois is like with this $138 billion that we've gotten from the federal government. The only reason we're doing better is because of that bailout. And you know, we need to be reminded that that's not real money. So it's bad across the board, because it's the, you know, federal government, the feds printing money, borrowing trillions of dollars to kind of bail out the state. But in the end, it's all fake, right? And it's not real money. It's not a real economic growth. It's a high, a cocaine high, or whatever you want to choose as your example.
Well, but with respect to those pension funds, I understand we're looking forward to windfall returns, because some of Illinois' pension fund managers have identified heretofore underinvested opportunities in Africa to produce the kind of returns that we need to, shore up $250 to $400 billion in unfunded liabilities.
Yeah. There are no returns right now to solve the problem. The only real way to solve this is to reduce the debt. You know, we've got so much debt. And I was just looking at Chicago. You know, talking about the problems in Chicago and the crime, and you know what that can mean. It can mean unraveling of real estate values. Have fewer people come in to the city from the suburbs, and that means that there won't be enough revenues in the city to pay back its debts, and the pension debts in the city alone, forget, take what city households are on the hook for both state, local, each Chicago household is on the hook for about $150,000 each. They'll never be able to pay that.
No.
You know, especially when you take out the people who can't pay a penny. So it's a disaster, and you know, this is all adding up. And I think the crime, you know, coming back to the crime for a second and tying it back to pensions and tying it back to Miller's comments, right now Chicago has no way out. And the celebrations only hurt the chances of listening to what are some of the ideas for reforming things and making Chicago, you know, in the future viable. His comments are only hurt.
The NEA had a National Education Association, the country's biggest teachers union, had a real productive national meeting last month. I don't know if you've had a chance to review all the business items on the agenda. It's quite expansive. And this goes to thinking about schools reopening and everybody focused on COVID policy and not focus enough on what the NEA and its minions have planned for the kids, whether they're in classroom or not. And I'm not just talking about critical race theory. Some of the business items that were adopted, there's a couple hundred worth of them, but things like this: NEA shall identify, compile, and share on NEA Ed communities existing decolonizing the curriculum resources to educators seeking to be anti-racist in their classrooms and use existing communications and social media to promote it through their affiliates so the rank-and-file educators can utilize the resources in their classrooms. So if you thought that the teachers' unions were going to back off this identitarian indoctrination because of some of the pushback you're seeing from parents in Chicago Metro and around the country, you would be wrong.
Yeah, I think it's a real war, and you know, it's gonna heat up. I think there's no doubt in my mind as I travel around the state that people are shocked with this critical race theory and the imposition of it in schools and all that. But the question is, you know, the unions have massive power. They've got tons of money. They've got control of the legislatures in most places or many places, so they can shove this thing down our throats just like they did in Illinois with this teacher standards, where, you know, the legislature didn't even vote on it. Some commission did. And it's you know, law of the land here in Illinois, and that's going to happen in many states. The question is, how hard is it to undo and how hard is it to push back at the local level? And, you know, the parents aren't organized enough to push back. So this is going to be the big thing. You know, how well can parents organize? How well can, you know, we got a place like Illinois trying to create a parents' union to push back. It's going to take a lot because the unions have the power right now.
Yeah, and parents want to push back against critical race theory, but also about mask wearing, because there's been no definitive answer of what the plan is for the fall. Yeah, have you heard any school district that has a plan? The only one I heard is the Unified Teacher School District in Los Angeles. They're going to go back Monday through Friday, mandatory mask wearing, even if you've been vaccinated. But I don't know of one school district who has something set in place for the return in the fall.
Well, there was one, the brave one downstate, I forget which city, which said they weren't going to use masks, and they got punished by ISBE, by the State Board of Education. I forget who else punished them.
Right.
And so, you know, they wanted, you know, there is no clarity. The big union, the big district association in Illinois is asking for clarity. I don't think we're getting any clarity. They're going to play it to the last minute like they did school openings, where, you know, they have full control because nobody knows what the heck is going on. But what I'm doing, for example, I'm talking to my superintendent this week with the data, trying to understand where he is, and then I'll message to the Nutria area where I live. And, you know, that's what I recommend everybody do. FOIA for who's vaccinated, FOIA for, you know, what the percentage of staff is vaccinated. Use the data and, you know, start creating conversation among your community.
Well, I just cannot wait till we talk to you next week and hear the results of that meeting with the new Trier High School superintendent. That should be a fascinating discussion you have. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's I think we've had success in pushing back, especially on school openings and things like that. You know, they were only hearing from the unions. That's why they started to do whatever they did, because parents weren't speaking up. And once we did that with Open New Trier, which is a group we created, we helped open up the school more, Dan. So,
yeah, you guys did a great job. I mean, you should be commended. You guys were open long before any other school districts were.
No, I know these superintendents. We read a missive from the Hinsdale District 86 superintendent last week. She sent out to parents and stuff, you know, looking for more guidance from the state and from public health authorities. Because, I mean, she just has no idea just like in Nutrier. I mean, they have no idea what to do if the pediatrician at Department of Health or one of these politicians at the state level isn't telling them what to do. They can't figure it out on themselves. The collective wisdom of all of these highly educated, wealthy residents of Hinsdale or Nutrier. I mean, they're just at a loss. They don't know what to do, Ted. Do we wear the mask? Do we not wear the mask? What do we do? We don't know what to do. Dr. Ezekiel, help us at Nutrier or Hinsdale. We don't know. We can't make think for ourselves.
Yeah, I tell you another thing that that we're going to push back against is a lot of these school districts have these reopening advisory boards. Some of them are not approved by the board. They're just kind of this, you know, ad hoc administrative type groups. And, they have a lot of power. And most of them are populated by unions and not parents. And so, we're going to try to get ahead of that and push for, hey, we want more parents on those boards. So, it's a continuous step, Dan, as you know. This is hard, but this is how you fight back one step at a time.
All right. Ted Dabrowski fighting the fight in Nutrier and also at WirePoints, wirepoints.org is the website. Ted, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and we've got this paradox in America and within center-right ranks. On the one hand, all these suburban Mercedes Marxists wearing pea hats.
I've never heard you say Mercedes Marxist.
Yeah, you have. Well, you have been listening.
I've been listening.
Mm-hmm. The Chardonnay Antifa I'm talking about.
Okay.
On the one hand, you have this problem, these ghastly, middle-aged, leftist, pea-hat-wearing women who are driving all the identitarian politics. On the one hand, you have this gender gap in extremely or very proud to be an American. 77% of men in America, only 59% of women. Big gap. But on the other hand, in the conservative ranks, since I've been in GOP and conservative politics for a long time, what you see invariably is that conservative women do the majority of the work. I mean, the pro-life movement is led by conservative women, conservative, all of the moral issues really led by women.
They do the heavy lifting.
They do. I mean, seriously. And so... So what to do? I guess we need to mint more conservative women. I guess that's the answer. And how we do that, Michelle Easton may have some insight. She's written a book about it. Michelle Easton is the president of the Claire Booth Luce Center for Conservative Women. Her book, How to Raise a Conservative Daughter, alternative title that I would suggest,
what?
How to Save Western Civilization, because if you can do How to Raise a Conservative Daughter, you get to the other one. Michelle Easton, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm with you. I like that, How to Save Western Civilization. The book, How to Raise a Conservative Daughter, it's intended to be a guide for parents, grandparents, anybody in a position to influence the development of young Americans, young women today, because the cultural forces arrayed against the family today can be terrifying.
Just in terms of comporting with the culture of today, shouldn't the title also be, though, How to Raise a Conservative Birthing Person? Should it be birthing?
No.
Birthing person?
Moms forever.
No, okay.
Right?
Parent one? human?
One of my chapters is called A Woman's Differences Are Her Strength. The miracle of giving birth is something that that women makes us so special. It's a breathtaking miracle. And women are women and men are men, and thank heavens for that.
Well, give us some tips, not me per se, but our listening audience there, how to raise a conservative daughter. I think you've done it, so how do we replicate your success?
Yes, I've been working with thousands of young women now for 28 years here at the Center for Conservative Women. So I've noticed some things about them and their families that has made them turn out pretty well. One of the keys is to help daughters understand that they are loved by God. The faith aspect of being a conservative is key. You don't have to be a believer to be a conservative, but it's harder if you're not. And from there in the book, I describe how to move daughters forward through understanding the value of life, of work, of hard work as a virtue, of how to handle money, of deferred gratification, of how exceptional and incredible our country is. You know, Dan and Amy, it used to be a young woman growing up in a conservative family, she would pretty much turn out conservative. But it's just not a fair fight anymore because the cultural climate today, the social media, the radical indoctrination in schools, the entertainment industry, the beliefs have to be taught and nurtured and cultivated throughout a girl's upbringing. It's more of a job for parents and grandparents right. than it used to be.
But then how do you do that?
You ground them until they're conservative.
No. The process of letting them know their self-worth and not being, you know, stuck in this toxic social media world?
Yeah, well, for starters, in terms of faith, you take them to church. And even if you are not devout, you take them to church, you have them associate with people of faith to understand, you know, that God is a key part of life and that government can never be a substitute for but that's what, you know, that's what the left thinks, because their God is government. And we're all supposed to be dependent on government, on all the goodies, all the free stuff that they like to give. But we know that the true self-worth comes from religious belief. And it's a different thing from self-esteem. You know, there's a lot of talk about self-esteem. Tell kids how great they are 10 times a day. No. Self-esteem is, oh, I'm happy with myself. Self-worth is a sense of your own value as a human being. And that comes in large part from faith, from knowing that the creator of the universe cares about you. And so faith is the first step along the way. And then there's so many other things. I mean, I knew when I was 7 or 8 how big government overtaxed, because my father used to talk about it every night at the dinner table, the things our family couldn't do because government overtaxed us. You have to talk to your kids about the issues and your daughters. You have to teach them the core conservative beliefs and how wonderful it is to be a woman and how life is sacred at the beginning of life when babies are conceived and at the end when you get old. You have to talk about these things. Don't just assume they're going to get it through osmosis, because it's stacked against them today in the culture.
Well, that's where I wanted to go. So that foundation, you say, by going to church and being around faithful people and then defending life, that seems to me a real fork in the road. You either learned at a young age that that life is sacred and is to be defended from conception to natural death, or you fall prey to the sort of, everything is a personal choice. You go sort of the libertine, I should say, route. And if you get life wrong, then you get just about everything else wrong. It seems to be pretty strongly correlated there. If you get life right, you get a lot else, if not everything else right, too. And so that important sort of conversation and education.
That's right. And so much of what is being taught in many of the schools, public and private, we don't believe in. You know, they teach this 1619 project that America's revolution was to defend slavery. Excuse me, there was a king. We were overthrowing an abusive monarchy. They talk about socialism and, you know, how great socialism and how evil capitalism is. You got to point out to your kids, you know, these caravans from Central America, it's much closer for them to go to Venezuela, but they're not going to that socialist paradise, are they? They come to America where there's freedom and opportunity. You have to look at what's going on in the schools. Critical race theory. You know, all you white kids, you're born racist. You know, little five-year-olds, they're telling them they're born racist. And the beautiful black kids, and you are victims. No, they're not. I mean, you have to get a lot more involved in what's going on with your children and with your school, with their social life. And, you know, social media, many parents don't understand how powerful it is, how influential Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, TikTok, and they need to restrict, they need to look at it and restrict the harmful content.
Yeah, because kids don't watch TV anymore. They just watch their iPhones and YouTubes.
That's right.
And YouTube. You go to YouTube. Yeah.
I mean, you know, so Michelle, I want to ask you what your daughter thinks of this book. And did she help you at all?
I have thousands and thousands of daughters that I've worked with. The truth is I lost my daughter in a heart surgery. So that's part of my calling, I think, that all of these young women that I work with, I'm always thinking, my little girl, what would I have wanted somebody to tell her? And so it's interesting how you get these callings in life, isn't it? A door shuts and then a door opens. But I can tell you the young women, we have 7 women here this summer from all over the country, college interns, and they love it. I wrote this book for parents and grandparents, but they love it. They say this is really a guide for us as well to help us as we're growing up and for when we have children.
The other thing, too, is and you have a chapter on this, is to steep them in the actual history of America, including the individuals who made a positive difference in America's history, so they know there are models they can replicate in a modern context. So, for example, Susan B. Anthony, she wasn't just a suffragette, which was something to note. She was also a pro-life leader, thus the Susan B. Anthony list in D.C., for example. And, you know, a lot. When you're in this arena, you take for granted that people know this, but they don't know this. And, of course, in government school systems, they're going to be loath to talk about Susan B. Anthony, the pro-life leader. But this is important for young women to see examples and not examples of people to emulate and not sort of stylized versions of their history. Susan B. Anthony comes to mind.
That's right, Dan. The last chapter of How to Raise a Conservative Daughter is about some great conservative women leaders that our girls are never going to learn about in any of these women's studies programs, because the conservative and women's studies programs are about liberal, left-wing, socialist, Marxist women, not about all women. So I give them some great role models, some that have passed away, Claire Booth Luce, Margaret Thatcher, Phyllis Schlafly, some who are still with us, like Senator Marsha Blackburn, Tennessee, Governor Noem, Laura Schlesinger, Star Parker. We have some wonderful, great role models, strong, smart, conservative women who love being women, who believe in conservative ideals, and who have led very, very good lives as role models. How to Raise a Conservative Daughter really is meant to be a primer, perhaps to say, to raise young women with a lot of ideas, how to have conversations and how to have open-ended questions, how to urge them to politely challenge teachers. You know, when a teacher is going on about socialism, saying, could you share Nobel Prize winner economist Milton Friedman's view on that? Or if she's railing about how a woman has rights to control her body and have an abortion, a young woman can say, does science tell us that her baby is a part of her body or a separate human being? How to Raise a Conservative Daughter is filled with specific ideas like that. It's not too much philosophizing. There's some. And a lot of the experiences that I've picked up from working with these thousands of young women here over the 28 years that I've had this Center for Conservative Women.
Very good. She is Michelle Easton, president of the Center for Conservative Women. The book, again, How to Raise a Conservative Daughter, my alternative title, How to Save Western Civilization, important book. Michelle Easton, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck with that book.
Thank you, and God bless you both.
Thank you, and she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and we've become a national story again in Chicago because of the incredible violence over the weekend, more than 100 shots, 17 dead. One of the stories, though, this is an interesting one. Gunman who shot 3 people standing in a South Austin alley on the 4th of July may have gotten away with the brazen attack that left a woman dead. Had a witness with a concealed carry license not stepped in, according to Chicago police.
Oh.
Yeah.
Vigilante, I like her. Just good citizen.
4 people shot. One of the injured men was alleged to be the gunman who had shot the other 3 people before an uninvolved witness pulled his own gun and shot the attacker. So that can inform the conversation that, well, nobody's really going to have this conversation with her, but can inform your conversation in your circle, since we have unserious people in positions of authority like Mayor Triple Threat about guns being having agency, being animate objects, not inanimate objects. So a gun in the hands of a good guy stopped an attacker in South Austin. Guns in the hands of bad guys who you and your Cook County State's Attorney refuse to get serious about leave 17 people dead on Chicago streets over Independence Day weekend.
By the way, I'll ask her that.
Oh, you'll ask her that?
Yeah. 2 o'clock today. I know. If I even have Godspeed. I know.
Godspeed. I tweeted out. I asked people if they could ask Triple Threat one question. What would it be?
What would it be?
And my question, I'll offer this.
Yeah.
Just to get the conversation started. My question would be, Mayor, was Shirley Hemphill, may she rest in peace, from What's Happening, the inspiration for your hairstyle choice?
Seriously?
Well, I mean,
you're talking about AB.
Look, I've had enough.
Are you a serious person? Yes, you are.
No, she's not a serious person. So I why give her prompts for crocodile tears or false bravado? You're not a serious person. You're not serious about this. You haven't empowered police to do their job. You've got a Cook County State's Attorney who's a political ally who's not doing her job. So what's the point of this? Why should I treat unserious people seriously? Why should we? Speaking of which, I don't know if this is true or not. We'll have to do some follow-up. Attorney General Merrick Garland is replacing federal executions with bus tickets to Chicago. I don't know if that's true.
Let me guess. The Babylon Bee?
Yeah, it is the Babylon Bee.
It's pretty, I mean, that's...
It's the paper of record. In 2021 America, it's the paper of record.
Pretty creative.
They've been really sticking the landings lately at the Babylon Bee.
Yeah, just in time for the Olympics.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And, well, this was a surprising op-ed in the Wall Street Journal from Elaine Luria. She is a Democrat who represents Virginia's 2nd Congressional District. But she retired as a commander after 20 years in the U.S. Navy, and she asks the question and answers it. Does the Pentagon take China seriously? She is critical of the Biden administration's divest to invest strategy that she essentially argues has America less equipped to meet the challenge of Chinese communist aggression as opposed to more equipped. She notes, in 2010, the U.S. Navy had 68 more ships than the Chinese Navy. Today, it has 63 fewer. That's a swing of 131 ships in a decade. Combat aircraft procurement is down 22% from 2021. She's looking at the DOD budget for the coming fiscal year. Ammunition procurement down 40%, with China now having the world's third largest air force. And she also questions General Milley's assessment of the Chinese communist threat as it pertains to Taiwan, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who's busy reading tracks from Ibram Kendi and Robin DiAngelo. I think the probability is probably low in the immediate or near term that China would invade Taiwan, although Admiral John Aquilino, who's the Pacific Combatant Commander, testified before Congress that China could be prepared to take Taiwan by force in the next 6 years. Saying, we've seen things that I don't think we expected, and that's why I continue to talk about a sense of urgency with respect to Taiwan vis-a-vis China. By the way, you know, maybe foreshadowing was China's treatment of Hong Kong over the past several years, including most recently with shutting down Jimmy Lai's newspaper, Apple Daily. So they talk seriously, but are we marshaling the necessary resources to be serious? Let's put that question to our friend Cliff May, president of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies and foreign affairs columnist for The Washington Times. Cliff, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
What about Congressman Luria's observations, the disconnect between the rhetoric and the numbers in the DOD budget?
I give her a lot of credit. I mean, her military background obviously helps. I think she's looking at all of these things with a very clear eye. And I hope there will be more concern both on the Republican and Democratic side for the direction we're going vis-a-vis China and vis-a-vis such things as critical race theory, which I think is just very, very dangerous here at home.
Before we get to CRT, just a little bit more on China with President Xi sort of ramping up his rhetoric of late, too. How should we interpret that?
Well, he is very ambitious and very bellicose. He's the most powerful leader of the Chinese Communist Party and ruler of China and its possessions, such as Xinjiang, which is where the Uyghurs, a Turkic Muslim minority, live and are seriously mistreated. Both this administration, Biden administration, and the Trump administration has said that the treatment of the Uyghurs is tantamount to genocide. That's how bad it is. His speech celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Communist Party was threatening towards others, and he didn't mention all the terrible things that have happened over those 100 years, the Cultural Revolution, the Great Famine, the terrible things that have happened within China. Now, China has become much, much richer. In the early 1970s, when Kissinger and Nixon went to China and established good relations and said, we're going to help you develop economically. They were later brought into the World Trade Organization, given special privileges as a developing nation within that. But they've also been the world's leading thief of intellectual property. Not just volumes, but libraries, billions of dollars worth of American intellectual property have been stolen and still are being stolen. And I think until the Trump administration, we didn't have a realistic assessment of China. I think the predominant view on the right and the left was that as China gets richer, it'll get more moderate and more liberal. Hasn't happened under Xi. It's become more bellicose than ever. It wants hegemony in Asia, but it wants more than that eventually. And it sees itself as a competitor and not a friendly competitor to the United States.
Well, do you think President Xi is secretly smiling because of COVID? It destroyed America's economy.
Here's what I think about that. I don't believe. Look, it is not just coincidence, I think, that COVID emerged out of Wuhan, where China has its most important laboratory that works on bat viruses. That's like saying there was a sudden flood of chocolate out of Hershey, Pennsylvania. What a coincidence that is. Couldn't have anything to do with the chocolate manufacturer there. I don't know that they planned to get it out, although the military was working at this laboratory. So the possibility that they were working on this virus to make it into a weapon that they might use at some point cannot be ruled out. If you look at the kinds of research they were doing, I think it's more likely that it leaked out because of incompetence and carelessness. The Chinese, I think, could have, and maybe this was incompetence, maybe not, kept it within Wuhan and kept it within China. They may have thought, if we're going to suffer, the rest of the world should suffer too, that we do not need this disadvantage. They have not been transparent. They have not been helpful. They have been in control of the World Health Organization for years, which America pays huge amounts of money for, and so the World Health Organization did not do its job, and millions of people around the world and hundreds of thousands of people in America are dead as a result. Many economies around the world are decimated, and the Chinese are celebrating right now the anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party and saying such crazy things as, we don't know where this virus originated. Maybe it came from the U.S. Army. Right. Maybe it came from Australia in meats. We have no idea.
Well, General Mark Milley, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as well as Admiral Michael Gilday, who's Chief of Naval Operations, they don't have a lot of time to devote to the Chinese communists because they're busy trying to understand white rage.
Well, that is a huge problem as well. As you know, General Milley was testifying before Congress. He was questioned by people like Representative Mike Wallace, a former Green Beret, about what they had been hearing from cadets and from soldiers, which is the pushing of this critical race theory, not examining it in an intellectual fashion, but the pushing of it on cadets at West Point and on soldiers out there. And it is an extraordinarily divisive ideology. It is not, as you will read in a lot of the press, an analytical tool. It is not, as you will read, just an academic concept. Critical race theory is based on critical theory. Critical theory gave rise to Nazism and to Marxism. And it's pretty easy to understand the different variants, because what you have is Marxist theory focuses on class. You got the proletariat, the workers, and they're oppressed by the bourgeois, by the capitalists, by the employers. That's the world they see. The Nazis, you've got the Jews, and they have to be destroyed because they are a poison to white people, to Aryans, to Germans. That's Nazism. And then you have critical race theory, which says, well, there are people of color, and there are white people, and the white people are and always have and will continue to oppress the people of color, and so the white people must submit, must repent, must understand their place, and it goes beyond that. There's a guy, I think you may have mentioned him, Ibram X. Kendi, and he is a critical race theorist, one of the leading ones, and he has been very clear that the only remedy, and I'm quoting him now, the only remedy to racial discrimination is what he calls anti-racist discrimination. The only remedy to past discrimination is present discrimination. The only remedy to present discrimination is future discrimination. In other words, what he's saying is we need to establish discrimination against white people by people of color. What's also crazy about this, what is a white person, for goodness sake? A Swede is white, a Greek is white, a Chechen is white, an Iranian is white. Are they really all of one identity, one group? And a people, what does it mean, people of color? Who's the people? You could have African ancestry, Latin American ancestry, which may mean you're of Italian background in Argentina, Asian Arab. These are very strange and odd concepts to pretend that they really make sense. And this whole, and you mentioned the idea of white rage, the idea that if you have pale skin, you're susceptible to anger and rage that is uncontrollable. All of this is nonsense, pseudo-academic, but it is being taught on our college campuses and increasingly K-12 as well.
I wanted to address another potential national security topic with you, and that is trials and tribulations of one Hunter Biden. More emails, text messages recovered from the computer that was left at this Delaware computer shop, apparently. And among other things, a text in 2019 to his daughter, Hunter's daughter, Naomi, "I hope you can do what I did and pay everything for this entire family for 30 years. It's really hard, but don't worry. Unlike Pop, Joe, I won't make you give me half your salary." So Hunter and the big guy, if Hunter was, as these text messages, and there's more emails that suggest he was paying for maintenance and upkeep of the big guy's compound there in Delaware, if he's getting funded by Ukrainian oligarchs and Chinese communists, the timing of all this is not clear where his money was coming from at what particular time, but we know Ukrainian oligarchs at minimum, and then the Chinese communists, Rosemont Seneca partners. If that money is going to him and then it is winding up benefiting the big guy, then don't we have at least some questions to ask about exactly what these business arrangements are and how the big guy, now the president of the United States, benefits?
You would think so. And what's really startling to me as somebody who, you know, spent decades as a full-time journalist is how the mainstream media has no interest in knowing the truth of the story, no interest in investigating it. They really just prefer not to know. They don't think the people have a right to know. They're just tuning this out. It's really it's a terrible indictment of contemporary journalism at the highest levels. But then what's happened to a lot of the major media, I find just distressing. It really bothers me.
He is Cliff May, president of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, foreign affairs columnist for the Washington Times as well. Cliff, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Sports and politics and sports and politics and sports and politics and intersection.
Nation.
Arrogance and ignorance. Arrogance, ignorance, and arrogance and ignorance.
Intersection.
Remarking on the career of Rachel Nichols, no. Longtime ESPN reporter, who said is now coming to an end, or soon will be.
She hasn't been fired.
Not yet. She will
made
be,
an
though.
On-air apology. I thought it was perfect.
Yeah, she will be. Rachel Nichols, you've probably seen her if you watch ESPN. I don't anymore, but...
she's been there for a long time.
MS-ESPN, more aptly titled. Rachel Nichols caught on a hot mic saying her black colleague Maria Taylor was only tapped to host the NBA Finals to boost diversity at the network. And then Rachel Nichols offered this apology on her NBA program.
They teach you in journalism school is don't be the story. And I don't plan to break that rule today or distract from a fantastic finals. But I also don't want to let this moment pass without saying how much I respect, how much I value our colleagues here at ESPN, how deeply, deeply sorry I am for disappointing those I hurt, particularly Maria Taylor, and how grateful I am to be part of this outstanding team.
And then Kendrick Perkins said, thank you for accepting responsibility for your actions. Oh, so generous.
Well, and former NBA player Steven Jackson said that ESPN gave Maria Taylor that sympathy job to placate to Black Lives Matter.
Maria Taylor, by the way, apparently in a bit of a contract dispute. She reportedly makes $1 million a year, but she was offered a 5X increase. She was offered $5 million a year, but she declined.
And then this tape came out. Timing's everything here.
Well, it was a hot mic moment. It wasn't a tape. She declined the $5 million because she wants to make Stephen A. Smith money, which is $8 million a year.
Is she anybody that worth that much money? Oh my God. I had no idea that they had such exorbitant salaries over there at ESPN.
Well,
No clue.
I think that will, at some point, that's going to get right-sized, like network affiliate newsreader salaries, because the audience and the advertising just isn't there. The audience isn't there, so the advertising's not there, as you continue to see ESPN hemorrhage subscribers in our a la carte world with the cable, with the debundling of cable networks in terms of your subscribers, and frankly, just people fleeing cable as a way to consume information, consume content. The interesting thing, too, about Maria Taylor and this whole Rachel Nichols thing, they picked her to host the NBA thing because the network is to boost diversity at the network.
Right, but that was Rachel's gig in her contract, that was her show. But they don't.
Whatever. Isn't ESPN, doesn't ESPN explicitly state, doesn't every leftist organization state, we do things to boost diversity in our ranks, that we're diversity focused? We have diversity training sessions. We are counting by race and other identitarian characteristics. So why is that a hot mic moment? Why does she owe anybody an apology? That's what the network says they do. She's just saying what the network is saying. But she owes an apology because why? Because she made the suggestion Maria Taylor is there because of her sports knowledge? Or her NBA knowledge? She's not. So what? But she has to apologize to try and keep her job, which I predict she won't keep.
All right. You want to make a bet?
We'll see.
All right. I think she's going to keep it.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.